got Randy. Excuse me, we have Randy connected. Are we broadcasting too? Excellent. All righty. Well, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchak. I'm chair of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I want to call this special meeting to order. It is 1:30-ish, 1:32 on May 27th. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the state capitol. And also present with me are Commissioner Brian Crotius, and also present on the phone is Commissioner Randy Christman, so we have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. We also don't have any items on consent, so we will move right into the special meeting items, of which there are four, and one of those belongs to Commissioner Christman. That's first on our agenda, so I'll turn it over to you. Wait, I forgot to ask others for opening comments. Do you have any, Brian?
No opening comments.
I kind of assume not. And Randy, if you have any opening comments, you can do those and then go into your first item.
Okay, I'll just thank you all for your patience and allowing me to call in. I'm over in Heimdall, North Dakota. We just finished one of those wonderful traditional small town funeral lunches. And for those of you who follow small town North Dakota things, it's closed now, but you may remember till just about 10 or 15 years ago, Heimdall was the home of Josie's Cafe, where right until the end they had nickel coffee. But with that, I'll move into my only motion today. I move the commission adopt the order on eligible telecommunications carrier designation in Cable One, VOIP, LLC, designated eligible carrier, application case number PU 21-123.
Second.
On March 30th, Cable One filed an application for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier. The rest of the way, I'll say ETC, for the purpose of receiving Federal Communications Commission Rural Digital Opportunity Fund, and the rest of the way, I'll say RDOF. Funding and in specified census blocks in North Dakota. All these census blocks are in the Fargo area. The FCC requires that Cable One be designated as an ETC by June 7th for the RDOF funding. Cable One also seeks designation as an ETC for the purpose of receiving federal universal service support for low-income consumers. They propose to provide lifeline service in eight areas within the Fargo Exchange. Those eight are known as Reed, Briarwood, Fargo, Prairie Rose, Horace, Frontier, Cass, and Riley's Acres. And this designation is also known as Lifeline Only ETC designation. So on April 14th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing. The notice identified three issues to be considered in both matters, and those three issues are, one, is the applicant qualified, number two, what universal support area should be designated, and number three, is designation as an ETC in the public interest. So to address those, our North Dakota Administrative Code requires a full description of available service in the ETC's official directory. Since Cable One is not an interconnected VoIP service provider, it does not have a telephone directly, and so first of all, they're requesting a waiver from that requirement. Now, as to their two ETC requests, the RDOF part of it, a carrier is eligible to receive these federal universal service support dollars if the company meets certain requirements, including what the company... the company must provide each of the supported telecom services listed by the FCC. It must offer and advertise the availability of and charges for such services throughout the supported areas. It must certify that it will comply with the service requirements available to the support it receives. It must submit a five-year plan that describes with specificity proposed improvements or upgrades to its network throughout the supported areas, and it must demonstrate that it will satisfy consumer protection and service quality standards. In addition to that, to receive RDOF funding, Cable One must offer commercially at least one voice and one broadband service speeds of at least 1 gigabit per second with a latency of at or below 100 milliseconds. It must offer these services to 40% of the assigned locations in North Dakota by the end of the third year of support, an additional 20% by the end of the fourth and fifth years, and by the end of year six, they're going to revise these numbers. Cable One proposes to provide the service required for RDOF funding by either using its own facilities or a combination of its own facilities and the resale of another carrier's facilities. So regarding RDOF funding, I do believe that the provision of adequate essential and non-essential telecom services in these exchanges will be facilitated and supported by the technical and financial capabilities of Cable One. And so I think it is in the public interest that it be designated as an ETC in the areas that they request it. As for the Lifeline-only ETC part, again, Cable One will offer the services and functions using a combination of their own facilities and the facilities of other providers. Regarding Lifeline, I again believe that the services in these exchanges will be facilitated and supported by their technical and financial capabilities. So I think it is in the public interest that it be designated as an ETC in the service area requested. So in summary, I believe that Cable One's request to be designated as an ETC for both RDOF funding and their request for ETC for the Federal Universal Service support for low income should be approved. And I also believe the waiver of the requirements to publish the full description of their service in an official telephone directory, that should be granted.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
All opposed signify by saying aye. Or no, nay. Motion is approved.
Thank you, Jack.
And that concludes my portfolio announcement.
Excellent. Thank you, Randy. All right. You made me hungry for one of those small town post-funeral lunches, macaroni salad and ham sandwiches. Yum.
It's so good.
All right. We've got three items remaining. They all belong to Commissioner Christman. So take it away. Commissioner Crosses.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're going to get this right. And we're on track. If it's okay with you, I'd like to move the discussion for BK3 after BK4. So to switch those two around, I think it'll flow a little bit better that way.
I am fine with that, except for I'm looking and I don't have BK3 paperwork in here.
There isn't.
It's just discussion.
It was withdrawn. Right. Withdrawn.
It was withdrawn. Okay, I see that marked. All right, thank you.
Okay, so my first item, I move the commission approve the natural gas rates of Montana Dakota Utilities Company and Great Plains Natural Gas filed on May 7th, 2021 to be effective with service rendered on or after June 1st, 2021 in Montana Dakota Utilities Company 2020 Natural Gas Rate Increase Application, case number PU-20-379.
Second.
Excuse me, I knew that was going to happen. This is a procedural matter. It would quite often find itself on consent. This was a part of the order that we approved on May 5th during the MDU natural gas case, as well as the Great Plains natural gas case. The two were combined. As a part of the order that was issued on May 5th, MDU shall file for commission approval compliance rate schedules consistent with that order, which they did. Staff reviewed them. They are consistent with the order, and I will be voting to approve this.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Jack. The next, I move the commission adopt the order in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, cost of gas 2021, tariff monthly adjustments, case number PU-21-8.
Second.
Okay. And again, this is one of actually four different filings for four different entities that we did receive. It's related to the February cold weather event and MDU. In this instance, filed their application for a variance to their surcharge on March 31st of 2021. They were asking at that time for a variance that would extend the time for recovery for the undercollected balance, again related to the cold weather event, from 12 months, which we would normally do, to 17 months, and they were looking at May 1st, 2021 through September 30th, 2022. We had an informal hearing with MDU. We discussed the matter, and subsequent or following that informal hearing, the adjustment was moved from 17 months to 16 months. And again, this is something that we would normally look at on an annual basis during the month of October, but the circumstances were quite unique as a result of the widespread cold in February. So the company proposed, and we went into discussion with them on changing how that amount would be recovered because it was fairly significant. So we did issue a notice of opportunity for hearing on the matter. No comments or requests were received. And the best way to describe this in terms of how we're approaching that impact that customers will experience, MDU customers, which is approximately $100 per year. Does that sound right, Victor? I saw the range from 80 to 100, but when I look at, do the math, it's roughly $100. And I shouldn't say per year, $100 impact overall for an MDU customer. So we looked at ways to mitigate the impact on a month-to-month basis, smooth out the impact, so the effect is less pronounced during the winter months when heating bills are high and more pronounced in the summer months when heating bills are low. So there wasn't to prevent that situation where someone would get their January heating bill, have a significant amount layered on top of that, and then have to deal with that at the same time. One thing I'll point out, and it's important, utilities don't profit from the sale of natural gas. It's a pass-through cost. They're at the mercy of whatever market conditions are present at that given time. They bid into the market. They make their gas purchases. In MDU's case, they have not quite, but close to half of the gas that they provide to their customers. Goes through a storage lease that they have. They purchase the gas when it's lower priced in the summer months, put it into storage. There is a cost of storage, but then that gas is utilized during the winter months when gas prices would be higher, typically. So in the event of, when you look at the February event, the one thing that you'll probably hear me repeat on some of the others that we have on the agenda, some of the utilities, there was a Kansas utility that spent three times what they would normally spend to purchase natural gas, three times over a four-day period compared to what they would spend over a three-year period. So it was that significant, and that was for a gas utility in Kansas, but there are stories like that across the country. So the event demonstrates, in my opinion, the need to take a hard look at national energy policy, the direction the country is headed. Natural gas is being utilized more, not just for heating, but for electric generation. You've heard what happened during the February cold weather event. Wellheads were freezing in Texas. There were pipeline constraints. There were other issues at play. And as I had talked with Victor earlier, You had one utility bidding against another utility to secure enough gas to run their peaking plants and to deliver gas to their customers. And that's just not a healthy situation when you don't have a ceiling in place. And while I do believe free market principles should be in play, and I think that's good overall, in this particular instance, you saw gas go from $4 a decatherm to $150 a decatherm. It skyrocketed, and the alternative was not providing gas to customers or not generating electricity. So it was quite significant. I know there are investigations underway at the federal level. The FERC is looking into the pricing mechanisms to see if there was any market manipulation. Again, not on behalf of the utilities. They don't set market prices. They have to buy into the market. But for other potential entities that were making this gas available at the time, and also the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, it would be the acronym there, I believe, looking into the pricing mechanisms as well. And I think that's an important aspect of all of this, because it just doesn't make sense that gas would go from $4 to $150 per decatherm over a four-day period. And I realize that bidding into the market drove it up substantially, but we'll see what that investigation winds up finding, and I'm extremely interested, as I know many people are, in terms of what that finding will be, or those findings will be. So with that said, again, it's approximately $100. The rates will be effective for customers on the MDU system. I don't think this is correct, is it? Okay, beginning in June through October, those will be the summer month rates on a per decatherm basis. They'll be higher than the additional decatherm adder from November through April, and then they'll go back down again from May through September of 2022, and then this will be wrapped up. So I don't anticipate customers seeing more than a $4, $5, maybe $6 impact per month on the MDU system. But it'll depend on the given month. If you're using five decatherms, like I did personally at my house in May, or I should say in April, at the higher rate, five decatherms is different than using myself as an example, the 22 decatherms I used in February. So it's adjusted accordingly. I think it's about as fair as we can make this. And companies, again, don't make money, but they are entitled by law to recover these costs. So it's an unfortunate incident, but at the same time, I think we've taken the appropriate steps to smooth things out to the extent possible for the customers.
We have a motion and a second for Commissioner Christman. Is there any further discussion?
Commissioner Christman, did you have any other comments on this?
No, I do not. Thanks.
Okay. From my perspective, Brian, I think you hit on some really good points. And the one key point that you made of utilities not profiting from this is really relevant. Obviously, some people did profit from this. And I think that's where the investigations that Brian mentioned are really critical, because we can't be depending so strongly on natural gas to meet heating and electricity generation needs in this country in the winter without looking at the markets and how that is marketed and contracted moving forward. There's a lot of really important work that needs to be done on that. As it stands, what the commission's attempting to do here is to help smooth out the price increases that customers are going to be feeling, rather than having it just a per decatherm the same throughout the year. We've tried to increase it a little bit more in the summer when they're typically not using as much and natural gas, and then have it be a little bit lower in the winter months, this adder, so that their winter months where their increased use drives up their bill anyway, will be a little bit softer and then back up again in the summer. So, and spreading it, we typically would spread these costs over 12 months, and here we're spreading them over 16 months. So that helps mitigate it even further. So we're trying to recognize this significant jump and reduce the impacts it has on customer bills in any one given month.
You know, and the one point that I forgot to make, and I think one of the most troubling aspects in all of this, when you look at low-income households, you have individuals that live in older homes, in older parts of town, smaller homes compared to newer construction, for example, in a newer part of any particular town or city. And you can be in a 1,500-square-foot home and spend more for natural gas to heat that home than you would in a home, a more newly constructed home that has twice the square footage. So the impact of low-income households in particular will be very pronounced. This isn't favorable for anyone. But when we do talk about needing answers to why the markets performed the way they did and why pricing happened the way it did during this cold weather event, you know, you have to remember it's the end user that pays the price in all of this. And that, again, is one of the most troubling aspects. And not that anyone likes to see this occur, but some households are better equipped than others to deal with the financial impact. So hopefully, again, to echo both what the chair said and what I've said, smoothing this out in recognition of that impact, I think, is the prudent route to go without question.
Is there any other discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. The motion's approved.
Okay, next, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Great Plains Natural Gas Company, cost of gas 2021, tariff monthly adjustments, case number PU-21-10.
Second.
Okay, now this is the same scenario, only earlier in the, I shouldn't say earlier, but we're early in the process on this one. This is for Great Plains Natural Gas, which serves the Wahpeton area. And they did file with the commission on May 21st their application for another variance, a variance for this entity, to true up the cost of gas due to the February cold weather event. So this is a notice of opportunity for hearing. The variance would extend the timeline for recovery, what they're proposing on the undercollected balance from the February event, from 12 months to 23 months, or from July 1st, 2021 through May 31st, 2023. The same issues will be considered as with MDU and also with NSP. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceeding and the reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by June 18th, 2021, and anyone who would be interested can contact the commission. And just some quick numbers. The overall impact to Great Plains customers in North Dakota would be, well, I wonder if that would be correct or if that's the overall number of 1.5 to 1.6 million. I think that might be the overall number, and North Dakota would be just over a half a million. But again, that would be the additional cost during the cold weather event that the company incurred. If it did extend over a 23-month period as proposed, it would be right around $1 per decatherm. And around $2 million overall for the entire entity, both sides of the river, just for North Dakota? Okay. So this is a notice of opportunity for hearing, and anyone interested, as described, can reach out to the commission.
You have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying.
Madam Chair?
Oh, sorry, Randy. Yes.
Yeah, I do. When I first saw this, I had some concerns with the language and the notice. And in visiting with staff, I took some comfort, but I do want to point out my concern. In case someone else is viewing it with the same thoughts. As I read this originally, I thought that this was leaving us with really only one option under this notice to allow them recovery, and that was for a 23-month period that would end the end of May of 2023. And while I'll continue to keep an open mind for more information at this point, I would not be supportive of extending this out that long through a second winter. And so I just want to be clear that in my support for this, for issuing this notice, I'm coming at it from a perspective where I believe this notice allows us to conclude with a shorter period of time for recovery than that.
Yeah, my interpretation is consistent with the other two cases that we've processed. This gives us ample flexibility to do what we think, to pursue what we think is the best course of action in terms of recovery and how those costs are moved around on a month-to-month or seasonal basis. So I'm very comfortable as well that we do have that flexibility, and I have the same questions as staff, not only on this one, but from the previous ones. And they've indicated yes.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify aye. All the opposed signify by saying nay.
Okay, now. I don't know. Is this considered a discussion item, or
this would be a discussion item?
Are we ready to go into discussion?
I think we are. it wasn't. Can we note it? Was it noticed appropriately then, Jack?
Sure.
Since it's a special meeting, we usually only address the things that are noticed.
Chairman Fedorchuk, we did notice this correctly. If you look under BK3. It provides what we'll be discussing, the reasons
okay.
for the withdrawal and the next steps.
Perfect. That's fine.
Yeah, I had the same question, and my direction to Jack yesterday was make sure it's worded the way we need it to have it worded. So,
good job.
Okay, the reason I'm withdrawing this, we were moving forward, and I don't mean to cause any additional angst over this, but as I've continued to review the NSP numbers in particular and what they're asking for. I seem to be finding myself with more questions than answers in a number of areas. And just to give a little bit of a ranking, if you will, the impact to an MDU customer from the cold weather event was approximately $100. The impact, the way I'm looking at the Great Plains filing, is approximately $160. Dakota Natural Gas had no impact to customers. And the reason they didn't have an impact to customers, they contract their gas on the first of the month for the entire month. So they essentially locked into pricing when it was normal pricing, if you will, for this time of year, that time of year. So they locked in. That was their pricing strategy. It worked out very well in this particular instance. But at the same time, in talking with staff, it could have worked out very poorly. if the cold weather event had happened on January 31st or January 30th, for example, and then they had to buy gas on February 1st when prices were elevated significantly, then they would try to have to face the task of locking into those gas prices during a time when they were extremely high or would have been extremely high had the timing not worked out the way it did. But with that said, if you're in Drayton, Hillsboro, and some of the other communities that Dakota Natural Gas does serve, there will be no impact to those customers, essentially.
I would clarify that as minimal impact. I don't think we can say there's no impact, but the impact is minimal. And
that's true.
And probably the traditional type of normal ebb and flow we would have on these kind of adjustments in a normal winter.
Right, right. So we're not looking at any type of a special adjustment that I'm aware of for Dakota Natural Gas, other than what we would normally do when we review them in October, as we would with the others, to see if they have overcollected, undercollected. But then we have NSP, and NSP is asking for $240 per customer. So you have Dakota Natural Gas essentially at little impact. You have Montana Dakota Utilities at $100 of impact, Great Plains at $160, and then you have NSP at $240. Now, they all have different pricing strategies. MDU has access to low-priced natural gas, Bakken natural gas. They also have close to 50% of their gas supply is contracted and stored, or they have that storage capacity, which helps out, obviously, during times like this. But as I've gone through this, I have more questions for Northern States Power, including the gas pricing strategy they have in place, the timing of their purchases. I don't know that I'm 100% clear on the 190,000 decatherms that they talked about drawing from storage when I look at the February filing, and it roughly adds up to 240,000 decatherms. So there seems to be a discrepancy. I don't know what they paid for their gas peaking plants at the same time. And was that consistent from a generating standpoint as what they were providing to customers to heat their homes? And I think I made the other points as I had talked about the other entities, but I'm hesitant at best. I'm just not willing to take the $240 adjustment at face value, rather than taking a deeper dive into why they were outperformed by utilities utilizing the same supply lines, and two of them would be the Viking pipeline and then the Northern Natural Gas pipeline systems. That's the same system that Great Plains uses to serve Wahpeton, those two systems. So the numbers aren't lining up. Not that I would expect them to line up perfectly, because they have different contracting mechanisms, they have different strategies in place. But there's a significant difference between what others in the exact same region were able to do during the cold weather event. And going back to Dakota Natural Gas, they draw gas off the Viking pipeline. That's the same pipeline that serves Grand Forks. So if you live in Drayton, you have very little impact. If you live in Grand Forks, you have potentially a $240 impact. So I have more questions than not, and what I am proposing is that we bring them in, they being Northern States Power, for a formal hearing on the matter. And I have more than just the questions, more questions than just the ones that I presented. But I think on one hand, I want to get these processed. It's been mentioned, we don't want to stretch these out. But I think it's more important that we first ensure that we've gotten it right on the dollar amount and then move into how we allocate whatever the cost impact to consumers is after that. So I just don't have the same level of comfort, and it doesn't mean that we won't wind up in the same place, but I would just like to take a deeper dive into the numbers, into the request, into what their projections are, and make sure we're extremely thorough in that respect first. And again, after I looked at the informal presentation that they gave that day and started to go through and then researched the individual numbers that they presented a few weeks ago, several weeks ago, I just didn't have the level of comfort I need to move forward with how we spread that projected cost out. So that's where I'm at on it. I know we'd want to move fairly quickly because the clock is ticking, but again, I think it's more important to get it right with the initial number and then go to step two, which is the allocation mechanism.
So do you have – so what are the notice requirements for a formal hearing? And are we prepared to move forward with that quickly so we can move this along?
We can, I guess. I don't know the days. I don't – Jack, if you can speak to that, how many days we need for that, 30?
20 days.
20 days.
Okay. And the company – have we talked to the company about dates, et cetera?
No.
Okay.
I've sent off a number of data requests to the company, and we're awaiting responses.
Okay, good. No, I support this. I think it's a good idea. There's a lot more that meets the eye on these issues, so I think it's good to dig in and find out more about these rates for NSP, because they are more than double what MDUs are, and NSP has storage available on their system too. So I don't think we can dismiss a lot of it as, you know, the additional storage capacity that MDU has. So I think it's a great plan, and just I do think it's really important for us to move forward as quickly as possible, though, because we have to start allocating these costs that are going to remain for customers as soon as possible.
Jack, when we were talking, well, I've had multiple meetings with Jack, with Victor, with Pat, and I'm missing one. I think Brian Johnson was in on the last one as well. We had talked about, you know, knowing, you know, the urgency of getting this processed and issuing a notice of opportunity for hearing, or no, a notice of hearing, that might require even a special meeting, you know, just to issue that notice in the very near future. And I think you started to move in that direction in terms of preparing that.
We can, I guess, if we want to kind of base our next move on what the responses are, you know, the company has 10 days to respond to our data request, and I think the latest was sent out Tuesday after our last meeting.
Oh, that's right. I asked for more information because one went out on Friday, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
There was an initial round on Friday, and then there was those additional. Right. I think it was Monday.
Yeah. Was your sense that how they respond is going to change anything about your desire for a hearing?
No, I don't think so. I'd still like to move in that direction and just plot that course.
Okay. So we can move, if that's what the commission would like to do, we can move towards a formal hearing. We have to get an ALJ assigned, and I can start working with the company on dates.
And I guess that...
Can I jump in here a minute?
Go ahead, Randy.
I don't object to a deeper dive, but might it be possible, since even with the way we handled the previous case that we just finished up, where there was a higher rate in the summer, but because of the less use, the impact isn't near as much as it is in the winter. And so might it be possible to do this, as we had once kind of discussed in a work session or an informal, you know, in a similar format, using the numbers they gave us, set for to start in July instead of June like MDU is, and then continue on with the more formal investigation. And then if it turns out that we didn't have as much or as clear of information as we ought to have, we can lower it back down for the remaining 12 or 14 months or whatever would be left. But if I fear we're going to move into a formal thing here and we're going to lose two of these summer months when we could have been recovering something. And even though I share the concern that these numbers seem extraordinarily high, I'm sure that they are significantly more than zero. There's recovery to be had. I really wish we could be starting on that recovery in July already.
It would be, this is Jack, that would be procedurally uncommon, but theoretically that we could do that, do a notice of hearing, set the rates in motion subject to refund.
And would it have to be in the form of a refund, or could it just be lowering then what is potentially on the total bill throughout the rest of the month?
I think if we write it correctly, we could do it in the manner that you are suggesting.
So it's kind of like an interim rate.
It would be like an interim rate.
Mm-hmm. I really hate to lose these summer months because we know there's a lot of money that needs to be recovered.
We have done that on a rider case years ago on the electric side. Approved it in a similar fashion to interim rates, subject to a decision in a future. And that was a little bit different, but in a future case.
Structurally the same, though.
Right. Yep. So if you were thinking you could do something along those lines, it would be good to get a notice of opportunity out there as soon as possible. If we need,
and a notice of hearing?
Yeah.
I mean, why both?
I suppose, yeah. Well,
why would
the notice of
both?
Opportunity, I think we would need in order to issue any order, even when it was
correct. Yeah. So we would need
that would be to implement interim collection rates, that's for right. lack of a better term, or terms. And then the notice of hearing would be to bring the company in, see what we come up with, and
does that kind of procedurally make sense, Jack? Is that the right?
That makes sense. I think it would be best to give us a few days just to make sure that we have all our I's dotted and our T's crossed, and I think we could come up with a procedure to move forward with this.
So would it be best to issue a notice of opportunity today, if still possible?
Well, do we have a notice of opportunity available to be issued today? We would have to change
that. That's the item that was withdrawn.
Sure. Well, the notice of opportunity would not be on the specific issue anymore, though. This would be on the interim adjustment, correct?
Right, but I guess would we call it an interim adjustment? I mean,
I think I'd be more comfortable if you two talked about the procedural aspects, and because if we're going to go down this road, I don't anticipate, not that we, you know, like scheduling a lot of special meetings, but I don't think this would take more than just a couple of minutes from a procedural standpoint to implement, whether it's next Tuesday or Wednesday. I've almost said Monday, but that's Memorial Day. And I'd be very unpopular with staff. So,
sure.
Or even at the end of this week. Well, I guess tomorrow's the end of the week already. Mm-hmm. Time flies.
Because Jack and I can talk, and maybe so there is a work session tomorrow. I suppose in theory we could set something up.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Around that too.
On the tail end of that, maybe.
I was just thinking, if we wait until the next regularly scheduled meeting, that cuts it very close. I don't have confirmation that the
right.
company could implement in that very short time window.
Yeah, and I think we had
Jack and I can discuss about procedural steps.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that the recommendation from the commission?
I support that. I think that's a good idea. Good idea, Randy. Good idea, Brian.
I support it. I just don't want to lose sight of the ultimate intent of the meeting as well, which is to make sure we get this right, because there are some significant differences in terms of the recovery amounts.
As long as we don't preclude ourselves from, you know, or shut any doors to what can the final decision can be, which is, you know, in a rate case, we don't with interim rates either. Everything's still on the table.
Yep. I think that's how this would be. Somehow we'll figure out how to write that up.
But Randy is right in that, you know, these are the key months to start recovering and help mitigate the bill impact for folks, and also capture the customers who are most tied to the event. You know, every month you stray away from when the event happened, you're losing those customers who were actually part of it and gaining customers who weren't, and that's something we want to avoid as well.
Absolutely.
All right. So is there anything else on that issue? Great. Thank you, Brian. Thanks, Randy. With that, we've reached the end of our agenda. We will adjourn and then stand available for any questions. Who's first?
I'll go first. Okay. I have two questions, but one's going to take me a minute.